Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you Wednesday evening, October 19, 2011. It is now 7:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberties. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call toll-free 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. You may also still access this program through Blog Talk Radio, number of 646-652-4620. I encourage you to send us your email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Well, this evening, folks, we're going to have Andy Sutton back, and he's going to talk to us about something a little bit different, a little unusual. So stay tuned, be with us, and I believe he's on the air right now. Andy, is that you?
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Oh, Andy, I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm not doing too bad.
Good, good. Andy, I'm looking forward to tonight's show because I've read your blog, your Sensible Investor, and then your My Two Cents newsletter, and they have a slightly different ring than normal. I'd like to first, folks, I'm sorry I didn't introduce Andy. Andy's an economist, and he's the chief strategist for Sutton Associates in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Andy's with us the third Wednesday of each month, and has been now for several months, giving us updates on the economic situation, and he's willing to answer your questions. So we do invite you to call 888-773-4496. Now, folks, a lot of people tell me, and but you have no idea how many times I hear this, they say, I would have called, but I didn't want to interrupt. This program is not for us. This program is for you. Please interrupt us, even if it's not a question regarding attached to what exactly what we are talking about. This program is for you. Call in, and we'll help you out. Okay? So that's 888-773-4496, and we do have Andy Sutton as our guest this evening. All right. Andy, I was intrigued by your blog where you had mentioned that you were going to take, you know, a different approach in looking at the in fact, you didn't talk economics. You talked non-economics and our state of affairs. Would you like to brief our listeners as to the gist of that entire newsletter?
Well, I mean, basically, you know, this has been something that's been bugging me for a while. And you know, you'll hear a lot of people, you know, especially, I don't want to say older folks, but more mature individuals, those who have lived through you know, some of the difficult times, they always talk about the desire that they had when they were raising their kids or, you know, watching over grandchildren or whatever, to leave things better than they found them. And they always emphasize that. And I know, you know, in my own life, there's been a lot of people that have emphasized that to me. You know, you always want to make sure that you leave it better than you found it, you know, whether it's an apartment that you might rent or whatever the situation is. Don't leave things worse than you found them. And I think we're really, obviously, from an economic standpoint, we're definitely leaving things way worse than we found them. But, as you said, I think there's two other ways that we're really doing the same thing. And the first is all of this technology and how we're using technology to advance society, but at the same time, I would argue that technology is actually taking society and pushing it backwards, just from the standpoint that people don't want to have phone conversations anymore. People can't sit and talk to each other anymore if it's not a text message or an email or something along those lines, or something that's done on a Twitter or Facebook. People, they don't know how to relate to it, it seems. You know, maybe I'm being obtuse, but it seems that more and more this is becoming a trend. And I made the point also that, you know, we're always told that this technology is why we're so productive as Americans, and why we can get away with all these things in this country because we're so productive. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I worked for some pretty big companies in my time, and I know the wastage that those companies dealt with because of technology.
Right.
You know, people sit and surf in the internet. It's worse now, I'm sure, you know, in these bigger organizations, you know, with all this social media and all this other stuff going on, and people texting on cell phones. The waste is generally estimated in the billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year because of technology. So how much is it really pushing us forward in terms of productivity? So, you know, that was the selling point, productivity. But there's a cost to that on the backside, and that is obviously the wastage. And really, I think we're stepping back several fold in terms of society. People are more compartmentalized. Neighbors don't talk anymore. Everybody's in front of their computer. Or it's just a perception of mine. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm orbiting Mars. But it seems to me like this is becoming a real problem. So I thought, all right, you know, let's write this up and put it out there, and see how it bounces off the wall, and see what people think of it. I'd be curious as to what your thoughts are on that.
Well, what is interesting is I have to go back to an article that I read about 30 years ago, and they talked about the effect of television. This is before the computer and all this other stuff. The effect of television, what the effect of television had on society. And they gave the comparison of houses that were built in the first part, the first half of the 20th century. They all had porches. And the reason for the porch is that after finishing your meal at night and having a hard day at work, and usually it was physical labor, you would sit on your front porch and you would welcome people who would pass by and speak with them. And there was this interchange in the neighborhood because you had a front porch. What technology did, is it eliminated the front porch and placed people in their back room or their living room in the house. And it divorced them from the neighborhood. Now, that was the first article that I've ever written about exactly this subject, and I could not agree with you more. Now, I can be a real wise guy, Andy, and say the reason why people don't sit down over a cup of coffee and speak to one another is because there's no opportunity to multitask, you know. There probably is some truth to that wise guy statement, but you're absolutely, absolutely correct. We think if we've become independent and we have become more dependent. Oh, excuse me. Let me say one thing. There are several people listening to this program via their telephones. We're glad that you're there. No problem. Please do so. But I do want to remind you that if you do want to make a comment or ask a question, all you need to do is press the 1. I will see it on the board at the appropriate time. I'll bring you in, okay? Before you do that, you can listen all you want, okay? And there are other examples of that. We're totally withdrawn as a society. What unnerves me to no end is when I receive a email with no punctuation. I just drives me nuts. I mean, there's no capital letters, no lowercase, uppercase. Everything's wrong, but you can understand what they're saying. But it's sort of like hieroglyphics, and we're losing that discipline. But I'm with you 100% on that, Andy.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing you mentioned. The people that are waiting to talk, or maybe they're just listening on their phones. And this is an area where I knew when I did this I was probably going to get in trouble, because there are, you know, and I'm not saying that there's no use for any of this stuff. You know, there's certainly a lot of of benefits. People are able to keep in touch with family members. If a car breaks down on the side of the road, you're not waiting for the first kind soul to give you a ride to the next exit. You can unhinge the cell phone, call AAA, call parents, whatever, get a ride. There's certainly been a lot of benefits. I'm one of these aggregate kind of people, and I think unfortunately that's just the nature of my trade. And I think in the aggregate, I think we're losing
right on
that side. And I think we're leaving it worse than we found it. And I think that a lot of this technology, I know I have a lot of contact with teachers, and they tell me that the big push now in the schools is that technology is going to be the teacher. And I'm thinking, you know what, we had enough of a problem, and this ties into the second issue, the second half of the essay. We have enough of a problem, or had enough of a problem, educating kids when we were doing it with people. Now we're going to try and do it with computers. I'm just not buying it.
Talking about standardizing, I mean, you cannot flex, if you will. You cannot change positions or attitudes or whatever from students to students if you're doing it on a computer. Everyone gets the exact same thing, but every student is different. If you will allow me, I would like to give you another example where technology, which is perceived to be to increase productivity, has actually decreased productivity worldwide, especially in the United States, tremendously. May I make this one point, Andy, before you go on?
Sure, hit me. Go for it.
When the automatic answering machine came out, companies bought that because then they got rid of Agnes the operator, right? And they saved somebody. And they say, look how much more efficient it is. People can, we can take 20 calls at one time instead of just, waiting, for, and whatever. We don't have to hire extra people. We get extra calls. It'll handle the extra calls for us. And it's a free ride for us. So we buy it once, we amortize it, it's gone, and it's all profit. But what the companies do not take in consideration is that everyone who calls now, instead of getting Agnes on the phone and say, Agnes, I'd like to speak to so-and-so, within 5 seconds or 10 seconds, you are connected. And now every single person who calls gets what? Thank you for calling the ABC Tool Company, the proud manufacturer of the best tools this side of the Mississippi. Please listen carefully for our menu. It goes on and on and on. And then they go, if your mother ever lived in Slovakia and likes Italian pizza, press 5. I mean, you go on and on and on. And what they never added in is all of the people who are wasting 30 seconds to up to 2 minutes trying to figure out which button to press, In fact, I heard a speech given by this gal. Her name was Sally, and she was fabulous. She gave a depiction of answering, of making a toll-free call to a tech line or something. And she had a table. She had this whole thing rigged up. It was very theatrical. She had a table, and she sat down with a mock phone and whatever, and then immediately took out a host of medication that she took throughout this entire thing while she was waiting to get connected. And she made her point. And here's a case where we say, oh, look, productivity. Anyone can call and you can get in to see that company. You never get a business signal or you don't have to wait for Agnes. When in fact, everyone is wasting more time. Everyone. I would love to add up the additional minutes that people spend calling other people and waiting on the phone for the instructions to end. I'll bet it is in the hundreds of billions of dollars a year.
You're probably right. You figure out what the labor rate is and how many calls people make. I don't know how you endeavor about getting an accurate number, but we could probably get the BLS on that. I mean, they're pretty good at coming up with accurate figures.
Yeah. Well, let me apologize for ranting, but you put.
No, that's fine. That's a great example.
Well, we have a caller that wants to ask a question or make a comment. Okay, hold on, please. Caller, you're on the air. Your first name, please.
Dan.
I'm sorry.
Lynn.
Oh, Lynn. Yes, Lynn. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio. Do you have a question for Andy or a comment?
Well, I have a couple of questions. I'm trying to figure out where I met Andy. And was he a part of the original Legalized Gold, or is he too young for that, that Jim Blanchard started?
You're probably thinking Anthony Sutton.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've been asked by about
that.
100 people if that's my dad, and it's not. there's no relation between myself and Anthony that I know of.
Well, I would say that you have a few philosophical and financial points in common.
I've heard that also.
Maybe
I've
not
heard
related
some of his
by
work.
Blood, but by philosophy. But I was trying to figure that out. Anyway, I am unable to get my computer to cooperate with me tonight, and so I will be listening some, and I will be missing some because I can't get the silly computer to behave itself. I'm giving you a timeout right now.
Okay, very good. Lynn, thank you so much for calling Liberty Talk Radio. We certainly appreciate
it. People give their kids timeout and my computer timeout. What is the matter with you? It just won't respond. It's not doing anything.
Well, see, she's an example.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say there's an example of productivity going down the drain, but go ahead.
I wanted to know Andy's position. I've been doing quite a lot of study on immigration, and I know that doesn't sound like an economic issue, but to me it is both a philosophical, moral, and economic issue. I am very pro-open borders, and I contend that we have plenty of room for more people, that we need to erase most of the immigration quotas because they are collectivist in nature, and that we are shooting ourselves in the foot by not welcoming these hardworking people to our no longer existing gates that we used to have, where people came in, signed their name, and said, "I'm here to go to work. Thank you very much," and they went on their way and contributed greatly to our society. But I wondered what your thinking was on that.
Well, I mean, first, I'll preface this by saying that, you know, my family, several generations ago, came into this country from Europe. So the United States was primarily built by immigrants, if you really want to look at a strict definition. It is an economic problem. I think where a lot of people struggle with it are on two points. You know, the first being that you have a lot of these people that are coming here and they're taking under the table jobs, and many aren't contributing into the systems that they're drawing from. For example, there's big problems in some of the southwestern states with health care, education, welfare, things like that. So you have people coming in.
Okay, let me ask a question in the middle here. But what should be the real issue with people that are pro a market, voluntary market process? If you're for a voluntary market process, what's the real issue? Is it the immigrants, or is it all the people that get the welfare, the public education, and so forth?
Well, I mean, certainly it's all the people. I mean, I'm looking at it from an economic standpoint and saying, you know, right now you have a dislocation because you've got these people coming in here. And I'm not against immigration. I'm not saying we should close the borders or anything like that. And people say, well, they're taking our jobs. Well, there's a lot of people that are, you know, and there, again, it comes back to your point, where they're paid $10 or $11 an hour equivalent to sit on their behind. They don't want to take an $8.50 or $9 an hour job. So that's obviously an issue, too. It's not as simple as a lot of people think. I mean, at the bottom of it, economically, you know, where I'm thinking from is, if you're going to do this, then you do it in such a way that, you know, these people come over here, you make them legal by whatever process. You know, the process maybe needs to be changed, whatever. That's for politicians to figure out. get these people to work. And if they're going to draw off the system, then they have to contribute. That's what everybody else does. If the system needs to get trimmed, if we need to get rid of welfare and cut that back, and obviously that's become a problem for many, many states and the country as a whole. We have too many great society programs. That's a whole separate issue. That really doesn't have anything to do with immigrants or immigration. It has to do with people that are in this country and what kind of benefits are being paid out versus what kind of revenues are coming in and all of those types of things. So it's a multifaceted issue. Unfortunately, there's not an easy answer because it involves so many different things. Obviously you've got public policy, you have fiscal policy, you have people's emotions involved in this. It's a very political issue. Where certain political groups are very poor.
It's political right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
and others are dead against it.
We have two sides here in Texas. We have the people who are, who have been here for several hundred years with, names like Gutierrez and, what are you talking about? I was here before you were. And then we have the people a few people here in Texas who are really, I would say, stridently anti-immigrant. And what disturbs me is these are people who claim to be pro, as they say, free market. And I contend, my personal view is, that you cannot be free market without recognizing that there has to be a free flow of goods, labor, and capital. So once they start talking about they want to restrict immigration and they want to build a wall and they want to keep these people out, then I bristle, because to me that's not – why are you calling yourself free market? You're calling yourself you're calling yourself free market, but you're not free market.
Well, Lynn, you want to know the answer to this whole thing?
I do agree. The welfare, the public school system, these are huge problems, but I think they are problems – if we didn't have one immigrant in the country.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all.
Yeah.
As an old person, I even think that Medicare and Social Security are huge problems.
Absolutely.
I'm not closing my eyes to the fact that us old people have no right to have the kind of benefits that the government is willing to give us. We didn't pay for all those.
Lynn, we have to get on with our program, but I have the answer for you. You want the answer to the whole situation?
Oh, you do.
Absolutely. For every person who comes in here who wants to work, we ship out to that same country someone in the United States who does not want to work, and we call it a wash, okay? Okay, thank you very much for calling in, Lynn, okay? We'll get back on our program.
I think that's the most wonderful answer, and because I don't have a computer tonight for some odd reason, I will not get all the good benefits of this weekly program, and thank you a lot for taking my call. It was a lot of fun.
All right, thank you so much for calling.
I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, hope so. Thank you so much, Lynn. Bye-bye. All right, good question. There's immigration. I was speaking once to this elderly gentleman, an old friend of ours, a friend of the family, and he was so hot about immigration. He was so angry. He said, they get welfare, they get this, they get that. I said, well, you sound like you're angry about the government programs. And he stopped dead in his tracks, and he got angry at me. But he would not, he wasn't angry with the immigrants. He was angry with the programs, but he wouldn't admit it. And I think a lot of people are that way. Okay, well, enough about immigration, I guess. We batted that to death, and there's going to be no answer here tonight on that situation. I love the conversation. I think someday we'd love to do an entire program and have people call in about immigration, especially those people who are the hardcore conservatives saying, we should have walls and cameras and guns and tanks at the border and the whole bit. Love to hear from those people. Anyway, all right. Andy, where were we?
I think we were talking about technology, and then Lynn came on with her ailing computer system and kind of hammered my point into the ground as far as being a drag on productivity.
your mic.
I think the second part of that essay, if I can transition into that, was probably the more prescient and probably the one that people are going to identify a little bit more with, and that is the loss of our national identity. And I think that in that regard, we've definitely not left things better than we found them. And this has been going on for a long time. This has been a slow slide. It seems to be, and this really, when you think about it, it plays into that immigration debate.
Yeah.
It plays into the entitlement debate. This national identity problem, this moral crisis, and that's the two separate things, kind of. But between the two of those things, that really, they're contributing factors in every one of these debates that are going on right now, whether it's the debt ceiling or bank bonuses or what. You pick your issue, really.
Yeah.
People have forgotten what this country was founded on and what the principles were behind the founding of the country. And, you know, the government was never intended to be all things to all people. And I think that's what a lot of people today want. And it's no good. It was not designed that way. It was not designed that way for a really good reason. And we've tried to make it that, and you're seeing we're reaping the results of what we've sown over the past, really, 75 years, with regards to, you know, through the Great Depression, trying to get the government in charge of the economy. And that's really where a lot of this stuff started, was during the Depression.
Right.
Government tried to nationalize industries and do all this kind of thing, all the same stuff that you're seeing now. It's really very concerning to me, because we're repeating exactly the same mistakes that we made during the Depression. And I have a hard time, Joe, believing that people are, you know, in power, people in leadership positions, people that are advising these folks, these policy think tanks, I have a hard time believing that all of these people are completely ignorant of what happened 75 years ago.
I don't believe it. No, I agree. And people will say, well, these guys don't know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. We don't know what they are doing and why they're doing it. They won't tell us, you know. But there is a reason why they are doing what they are doing. And it comes out only 10 or 20 years later when we look back and we go, oh, my goodness gracious, look at that. Because it coalesces. All this comes together eventually, and then someone writes a book and says, how stupid could you have been? You know, but when you're living in it, you don't notice it, because there's all these subtle changes that come about, which some affect you, some don't. Some you agree with, some you disagree with. There's no way to get your arms around it. But when it coalesces all together, you realize that you've lost the ball game. And there's no,
you know what,
back.
The funny thing about that essay was, I sat down with the explicit intention of writing something that had nothing to do with economics.
Yeah.
And when I was finished writing it, and I went back and read it, I realized it has everything to do with it.
That's right.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with it, but yet at the same time, it has everything to do with it, because that's what drives. That's what drives our desire to have particular leaders, or leaders that espouse particular policies. It's what our sense of the country is, really. It's what our, you know, people call it the entitlement mentality. Well, you know, those are the kind of people that think that, you know, the United States government is there to provide everything.
Right.
There's a lot of people that believe that. That's exactly what the role of government should be. And they think that Jefferson and Adams and people like that were being cruel, and they were being aristocratic because they didn't feel that should be the way government should be run. But there's a very good reason governments were not given all that power back then, you know, when the Constitution was written, is because they had seen firsthand the abuses of power that an overstepping government exercise. They saw it. They lived it.
What's interesting is people, you know, consider the forefathers great Americans. No, they weren't. They weren't great Americans. They were British. They were British subjects, and they were, by today's definition, terrorists. I mean, they were traitors. You know,
exactly.
And they were traitors for a reason. And our Constitution and our Bill of the Declaration of Independence, the way it's written, say now if our government gets like these guys again, it's our responsibility to make sure that we get a new government. And yet we've lost sight of that, and we've lost sight of that because we don't teach that in schools. This is all withdrawn, you know, from the school literature. We don't want to make sure that
exactly.
No one knows that. Let's stop just for station identification just real quickly.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Joe Cristiano, the host of Liberty Talk Radio. We have with us this evening Andy Sutton, economist and chief strategist for Sutton Associates in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We're talking about economic and not so economic things that all seem to tie together. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions. Please feel free to call 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. And please call us and interrupt us. We want you to interrupt us, okay? Andy, on your... We just lost somebody. Someone just wanted to make a... Here it is. Okay. We do have... Oh, I know who that is. I'll bet you your friend is here. Call me, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Jim.
Jim! Is this Jim from Bixby, Oklahoma?
Yes, exactly. How you doing, Jim? Good, Andy. How are you tonight?
Not too bad.
Hey, it won't take much of your time, but always enjoy when you when you're the guest on Joe's show, and I received your 2 cents commentary earlier this week, and really enjoyed it. It resonated with me on several levels, and I'm glad that that's kind of the focus of your topic tonight. I totally agree with your position. In fact, I helped my 19-year-old daughter a couple of years ago write a paper about this in high school, and we kind of discussed how it's technology is the downfall of our society, and has limited interpersonal skills and people, you know, face to face getting to know each other. And you know, anytime any of us go out in public, we're witness to that. You just cannot go out in public and not see people that have. If I go to my gym, you know, half the people have earbuds on, so they're basically unapproachable. Almost anywhere, if you go to, heaven forbid, an airport or something else, everyone's glued to their handheld computers or their laptops. The worst offense is having to listen to someone else's conversation while they're on a Bluetooth. We've all been there. It's just, maybe call me, old school and out of touch, but it's so nice to hear people that feel have the same feelings I do.
Hey, you know what, Jim? We'll start the old school club, and we'll order some T-shirts, and we'll get some jackets, and we'll just do it that way. How does that sound?
It sounds great. Well, I tell you, I might be the last holdout. I have not migrated to a smartphone yet. I'm a rebel.
You're a good man.
I thought you'd be proud of me. Yeah,
I am.
I'm one of the last holdouts to go to a smartphone.
I'll make a confession. I had one for a year. I thought it would help me. It didn't, and now I got rid of it. So
I love it. That's good to hear. Well, maybe I'll hold out longer. You're my inspiration. And then I mentioned in your article, and don't think you've said on the show, how there's a lot of wasted productivity of people out surfing the internet in the workplace today. There's a company in Tulsa that specializes in an industry called digital forensics.
Oh yeah,
and where they can uncover anywhere anyone has been at any time on a computer, even though you think you've deleted everything, and they're able to dig it out. And they find guys that have spent half their day on either porn sites or online gaming sites, and that's probably more prolific than any of us care to think.
I would imagine it probably is. We see, a lot of folks would come around and say, but look at that. Now we have a whole new cottage industry just because of people wasting time at work. So we are productive.
Exactly.
Look at all those jobs the stimulus created.
Exactly. And then lastly, Joe talked about what I call voicemail jail.
And, you know, companies are trying to get better at it. But, damn, when you have to go through a menu of options and be put on hold, it's so frustrating. And, you know, that's a customer experience, a defining moment for, you know, a customer and their company. And let me ask you, so, you know, without belaboring that issue, you know, what would you say is the most, you know, popular, most profitable airlines in the U.S.? Airline industry, okay. What's one of the most profitable growing airlines in the U.S.?
That is not a sector that I take up on a regular basis.
Joe, you throw a guess in.
I'm going to say the one that has the biggest government subsidy.
Well, Joe, are you there?
Oh, yeah, sure. I'm sorry, Jim. Yeah.
Okay, come on. Help me out here. An airline that's had growth and success.
Southwestern.
Thank you. Southwest Airlines. If you call their 800 number to book a reservation or to voice a complaint, you'll be answered by a live person.
Well, there you go.
Exactly. So that's what I was getting to by that. So,
oh, okay.
Anyways,
all right.
Enjoy listening to you two speak. Thanks for bringing me on to chat for a minute, and keep up the good work, both of you guys.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Thanks for calling, Jim. Good talking to you.
You bet, Andy. Take care. Yeah, bye bye.
Andy, in
the... Hey, you know, I was sweating bullets there for a minute coming up with that guess. I really don't take that much of a look at the airline industry, just because it seems to me that we're going to be at a point before too long here where the government's going to nationalize a lot of that, and we're going to have another Amtrak on our hands.
Right, yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, Andy, on your last My Two Cents, you talked about the revisionist history and the Great Depression. Would you like to just...
Yeah, that's coming out. That's coming out Friday.
Oh, well, that's not out yet. Oh, I'm kind of...
No, go right ahead.
Okay, well, I just wanted to know, maybe you want to give our listeners a little one-up on that and give them your take on that. I thought that was very interesting.
Well, this one was kind of a spinoff of the last one in a way, just because of the fact that we have done so much. I'll give you the myth right here, right now. 1929, a stock market crash, that caused the Great Depression. You go into the history books, you go into the media, you turn on the History Channel, you talk to, oh, I don't know what percentage of people, but I bet it would be a pretty high percentage. They will tell you the stock market crash in 29 is what caused the Great Depression,
right.
And that's absolutely wrong.
Right, absolutely right, great. Yeah.
That was another symptom of what really happened. And I'm not going to say what really happened because I want people to read the article. But basically what I did is I went through, and there were really three major phases of the Great Depression. It just wasn't one of those deals where the stock market crashed and it took 12 years to get things turned around again. There were actually three, some people would argue four, separate and very distinct phases to the Great Depression. And every one of them featured huge gaffes by the government and mischief on behalf of the Federal Reserve. It's a piece I think people would definitely get something out of. I didn't pull it out of mainline history. I pulled it out of media sources from way, way back when, research of my own, drew some of my own conclusions. And I tell you, when I draw my own conclusions, you know, or give my own opinions on some of these things. But there's a lot of facts in there that you will not get from a lot of these traditional sources. And this is one of the problems.
Yeah.
We have taught, how many generations now have gone through school and learned that it was the crash that caused the Great Depression? And the spinoff of that is, well, capitalism failed. The free market failed. And because of that, the government had to take over. And only when the government took over were we able to get things started and going in the right direction again. Am I right?
Right.
That's exactly what the message is. When you read a lot of these books, listen to programs, things like that, and when you fast forward to what happened a couple of years ago, from the 30s to the first decade here in the 21st century, that it's almost a repeat. It doesn't match exactly, but it rhymes. The same elements were going into it. The same element. They blew up speculative bubbles. We had the housing market, low interest rates, easy money, all this stuff. and all of a sudden the Fed yanks the punch bowl away and the whole thing comes crashing down.
I had a conversation regarding, you know, the recession and when getting out of it, and some people don't think it's that severe. And I said, you know, I wish I had a crystal ball. I would share it with everyone. But it sure seems strange to me that we are in a very severe, long-term recession. Some feel that we really are in a depression. And yet, we have several wars that we are, well, occupations or wars, whatever you want to call them, going on, which stimulates all this economic activity here, and we're still in a recession. What would happen if we brought all these troops home? Yeah, if we pulled it out, brought all the troops home, which we should do, you know, and killed all the wars. I know my own company, we do service industries because we do industrial health testing, and these are noisy factories. And when we go there, we ask them, you know, what are you making? What are those pieces of metal? And they go, oh, those are metal guards for Humvees or something like that. So, I mean, they don't make the Humvees, they don't make tanks, but they'll make metal parts for it. That war stops. These companies are all going to close down. They're going to go bankrupt. And yet, what's your take on that? We're in a recession with war, and usually the war stimulates enough economic activity, it puts us in the mode of, oh, we're out of the recession, but we're not.
Well, you know, war has changed a lot, really, when you think about it. I mean, if you go back to World War II, you had how many hundreds of thousands of people involved? Every one of those people had to have all this gear, tanks, jeeps, all this stuff. I mean, now you turn on CNN and you can watch the war on TV.
Right.
You know, we sit 100 miles away in a cruise ship and fire tomahawks in there. And sure, the tomahawks cost money, but, you know, the hands-on, I think, is a lot less. I'm no expert in the military or anything like that, but that's my perception. It seems that we have a lot less of the direct boots-on-the-ground kind of thing. I think that's a term they like to use.
Right.
You know, we do it more by remote control now.
Right.
So you don't have all this personnel-intensive equipment that's necessary. But your point is a very good one. Putting a cost on these wars and occupations is difficult, but it's not debatable that it's a huge amount of money. And if you scaled that down and said, all right, we're going to bring everybody home from Afghanistan, Iraq, where else are we? Libya, Yemen, Pakistan, wherever we're, you know, floating around over there. We're going to bring these guys home. First of all, you'd have a massive unemployment problem because you'd have all these people coming back, and the workforce, there's already an oversupply of labor. So you'd have this huge, and I'm not making an argument for being over there and doing all this stuff because I don't think we should be doing it. This is the box, though. And that's really what I'm trying to do, is outline the box that we're in for people. So you bring these guys home, you have this huge unemployment problem. You have a situation where now government spending drops by, say, $750 billion a year. Say they cut the defense budget by 75%. You know, they leave 250 in and pull 750 out. We'll call it an even trillion. You know, all of a sudden, now you're talking about another 6% off GDP.
Right.
We're in a depression.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's
absolutely
an instant depression.
Well, it's just
like all this other government spending. You know, you have all this money that's being spent on these hogwash programs, and as soon as they stop, we have an instant depression. We are so strung out. We're like the drug addict, Joe, that has to take 10 hits of heroin a day just to feel normal.
Right.
They don't even get a rise out of it
right.
anymore. That's
right.
Where our economy is. We spend all this money. It doesn't even do anything because they'd have to spend $100 trillion.
Right.
To do anything. That's how far down the road we are, how strung out our economy is, and people don't even realize it. People think because they can, you know, call an 800 number and get a credit card and swipe a credit card and go on vacation that everything's fine.
Right.
It's just it's a mirage.
Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, I went to a candy store. I was very, very small, 5 years old or something, and there was a small candy store in Harlem, you know, where I went. There's this typical, you know, very, very narrow, long, you know, where they dispense some soda and stuff like that, but very small place. And the guy who owned the place, I don't remember his name, but he was nasty. He was, you were scared to go in the place, you know. And I remember buying a little toy, you know, a little, and it was made out of plastic, you know, and usually it's made out of metal. I said, how come it's not made out of metal anymore? And a guy leaned over and very nastily said, we're at war in Korea. Don't you know that, kid? You know? And I went home, ran home to my mother, said, the man says we're at war. We're at war, you know? I didn't even know, you know, at that time. My point being is that even back then, we sacrificed, you know, in other words, we didn't make the metal toy, we made the plastic toy because we need the metal for you. We don't do any of that anymore. We sacrifice absolutely nothing. I mean, you can go to
war. Yeah, if you go back to World War II, you had, I forget if they were steel or if they were tin, pennies.
Oh, that's right.
So they didn't make them out of copper.
They were steel pennies.
Because they used the copper for the bullets.
That's right, steel pennies, right. A steel penny.
They were steel? Okay,
that's
I know
right.
It was steel
so
or tin.
For 3 years,
what.
They were steel pennies, yeah, and they're collector's items now. In fact, I have them. I got them about 30 years ago, and I just kept them. I don't know where they are, but I kept them. Yeah, there's 3 years of steel pennies. And but yeah, there was a sacrifice. You know, we had victory gardens and, you know, rationing of gasoline. And you couldn't buy a car because we were making tanks instead of jeeps instead of cars. But we don't do anything. In other words, everything is normal. Like Bush said, we'll take care of the war. Just go shopping. But what really bothers me is that when they give those employment numbers out, every time they recruit somebody to go overseas, that person's considered employed. That's cheating. That person's not employed. I mean, that person's working for the government. He's worse than unemployed because he is costing the government money. But yet he's taking... Anyway, I can get on that bandwagon. I don't want to take it from you.
Well, that's like the stimulus workers, too. I mean, I'm not demeaning somebody who's trying to go out and get a job and earn a paycheck so they can feed their wife and kids. Don't get me wrong. You think about it, though. The government borrows $100 billion from China or the Federal Reserve or whoever and says, all right, you guys go out, you fix these roads, build a bridge here, you know, put up a highway there, whatever. All right, so these guys go, they get the cement mixers, the pans, the bulldozers, whatever. They do the work, and then when it's done, now what?
Right.
So now we got another $100 billion in debt, and now we got these same guys are facing the unemployment line again. Where does it stop?
Right.
It's not sustainable. None of this is sustainable.
Yeah. All right, Andy, let me just stop for station identification one more time. And
you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, this is Joe Cristiano, Liberty Talk Radio. We have Andy Sutton with us tonight. He's an economist and chief strategist for Sutton & Associates in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We're talking about economic issues and not-so-economic issues that become economic issues anyway. We do invite you to call with any question that you might have, 888-773-4496, 888-773-4496. We have still several people on the line listening via telephone. Remember, if you do want to ask a question or make a comment, just press the 1 and we'll put you on the air. Also, send us your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Andy, what is your take on the Occupy Wall Street situation?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that.
I'm sorry.
My take on that is this is another one of those things that's like immigration. There's not a lot. It sounds, honestly, I think this is another lightning rod to absorb people's anger. I've heard some video interviews, watched some video interviews, and of some of the people that are down there. And, you know, it's hard because, I'm sure certain things make it, certain other things don't. But it seems to me like a lot of these people are just, they view Wall Street as the free market, and they're very much against the free market in a lot of cases. I'm sure they're not all like that. I'm sure there's some very educated people down there that understand that, you know, what's going on in Wall Street is not capitalism, but it's basically rigged market crony capitalism. I think it's a lightning rod. I think it's like a lot of these other movements that the politicians love to get behind and try to co-opt, because they know, and I think I said this in the piece, they can send guys out, women, on a Saturday afternoon, hand them a sign, they can yell this, that, and the other thing for a couple of hours, and then they put them on a bus and send them home, and everybody's all right, I did my part. You know, and the anger's spent, and the outrage is over. And I think the establishment loves these protests, because it doesn't do anything to change anything. People get out there, they yell, scream, whatever, and then everything stays pretty much the same,
right,
as it was.
Yeah.
You know, you had this End the Fed movement, and the Fed, I mean, they are certainly, they're the scoundrel. That is a scoundrel, that institution. It needs to be abolished. I didn't see anything in the Constitution about a Fed. I think it should be abolished.
Right, I agree.
That's, you know, and I know Ron Paul agrees with that, and I know there's a lot of other people that do. The thing is, you know, you send people out, they rally, whatever. You think the Congress is going to repeal the Federal Reserve Act? That's not going to happen. You know, you think the Congress is going to repeal, you know, these bailouts? You know, and say to these companies, hey, you know, you supposedly gave us $100 billion back. Well, we want the whole $16 trillion back. That's not going to happen.
Right.
It's not going to happen, because these guys are all in the bag. They're taking bribes and payoffs. You know, and they want to sit there and they want to tell, some old lady, you know, who's on Social Security, you know, trying to figure out whether she's going to be able to buy medicine or food this month, that, hey, you know, things are tight, lady. You got to buckle up. But, you know, we're going to sit here and take bribes and payoffs and kickbacks and all this other stuff. It's just I don't believe these rallies are going to affect any kind of real change. I just maybe I'm being overly pessimistic. I just don't see that as an avenue, of potential relief for us.
You know,
unfortunately,
if we had
535 Ron Pauls that were independent thinkers, that were not shills for this establishment, that'd be a different story.
Right.
There'd be a lot of reason for hope. Even if we had 100 of those guys, I think there'd be a lot of cause for optimism. But we don't. We have maybe a half a dozen or a dozen people like that are willing to stand up for the people. And that's not enough.
Well, you know, I contend, at least, that the people who are occupying Wall Street, they're occupying the wrong place. They should be occupying Washington. They should be protesting.
Well, that's a good point, too.
And if they were occupying Washington, they can say, it's your fault. But right now, they're occupying Wall Street, and many of them saying, we need government to control you guys, when it was government that allowed them to do it in the first place.
Right.
So, I mean, I think they have it in the wrong place, and I think the politicians just love it. Talking about politicians, which ones do you think, even if they only have a small chance of winning, you think would do us any good? Which ones would you pick?
I had to pick, I mean, obviously I would pick Ron Paul, and I'll say up front, I don't agree with everything he says, but when it comes to, the economics and the fiscal issues, the foreign policy, I think he's got it down. I think he knows what the problems are, and I think he's the kind of guy that could really push things in the right direction. But we need a lot more guys like that. You know, you could have one guy like that that's the president, but if you have a Congress that's in the establishment's pocket, that president's not going to get anything done.
Right.
You know, and that's the problem. You know, you've got too many of these people that are lifers, and, they're fully invested into that whole system, and all they're worried about is saying and doing whatever they have to get elected for another term so that they can continue to feather their nest, if you will, a little bit more. I mean, I think we need people that understand economics. We have a lot of economic illiterates in public office, and I'm not just talking at the national level. I'm talking about the state and local level, too. And that might be an area where people could actually affect some change. You know, if you have county commissioners or whatever that are economically illiterate, you know what? Get a bunch of people together and get them out of there. That's not hard to do. And start from the bottom. You know, clean up your own backyard.
Right.
I mean, that's my advice to people. You know, get out of debt. You know, quit relying on this Federal Reserve system. Quit relying on this dollar standard. I understand you have to use dollars in commerce and all that kind of thing. But don't make yourself a slave to it by taking out $50,000 in credit card debt. It's foolish. It's terribly foolish. It's irresponsible. You know, we criticize our government for doing the exact same thing that we as its constituents
right.
have done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Andy,
now, we're not leading either. We could lead by example, and we're not. And the dangerous thing for the establishment, that dollar standard system being the establishment, is the people could shut that down. And I've written about that a bunch of times and talked about it. You put those credit cards away for about a year, year and a half, that
right.
system will die.
That's right.
Because it needs more and more debt to feed off of. That's
right.
the way it works. People don't understand
right.
how that system works. And if you're running for office in this country and you're standing on a stage and you're going to debate with somebody and you're going to tell them, hey, I want to fix these problems, and you don't even understand how this system works, you're not fixing anything.
That's right. That's right. Andy, if...
That's just the way it is.
With the time we have left, which is about 3 minutes or so, if someone would ask you, where are we going? Generally, what should I do with my money? What do I do? You know, just I'm all confused. What advice would you give that person?
I mean, basically, as far as it comes to people's assets, the problem a lot of people are running into right now is it has to be in something. You know, if you have 100,000 Federal Reserve notes, they have to be somewhere. They can be in a bank. They can be under your mattress. They can be in gold and silver coins. They can be in bonds. They can be in stocks. They can be in commodities, whatever. But they have to be somewhere. And the problem that we're having right now is you have a lot of these somewheres basically being corrupt. Cash, obviously, we know what goes on there. You know, we have no fixed weight and measure. We have no honest weights and measures in this country as far as money goes. The dollar is not, there's nothing honest about the dollar. You know, a constitutional dollar was 371 and a quarter grains of silver.
Right.
Well, now a dollar is a piece of paper, and the value changes every day.
Right.
So that's not honest. So people say, all right, well, I don't want to do cash. I'll go into the stock market. All right. Well, then that goes up 500, down 400, doing all this stuff, and you got it's a momentum casino. You know, maybe you want to hide out in a corner, which is what I advise a lot of my clients to do. You know, collect income on some real conservative stuff and try and stay out of this mess. And, you know, you can do that if you're willing to be modest. That's one thing you can do. Bonds, promises on future payments of dollars, forget it. There's a couple countries that, you know, I would keep an eye on as far as potentially investing in some of their bonds. Some of them kind of get it. One of the big players just fell, Switzerland, a few weeks ago. They decided they were going to competitively devalue the franc, because they're worried about exports. So, you know, they're attacking their own currency now. They had a fairly hard currency. Now they're going to attack it. So this is the thing. Everybody's got to be somewhere, but the somewheres are all suspect. And I tell people you have to be vigilant. You can't marry ideas anymore. You know, in the 80s, you could marry an idea. You could throw darts at the Sunday business section and pick a winning portfolio. Today, you have to do due diligence times 10, and then you have to watch it like a hawk.
Right.
And that's what I tell people. And at the same time, don't obsess over it, because all it's going to do is make your life miserable.
That's correct. You could watch this every day,
and
it goes up and
down.
That's
why you hire a guy like
right.
me, because that's my job,
right.
is to watch these things and to obsess for you.
So you have,
and then that way
one,
you don't have to,
yeah.
you know, you do your due diligence, but you don't have to go crazy and stay up all night.
So you have this one big gigantic ulcer that you have for everybody, right?
I don't have the ulcer yet,
okay.
by the grace of God, but I'm sure if this gets too much worse, I'll probably be working on it.
Okay. Andy, we're almost closing the program now. We only got a couple minutes to go. Would you like to tell our listeners how they can reach you, contact you, or and get some information about what you do?
You can go to our website. It's www.sutton-associates.net. And there's pretty much on that website is all the information that you could possibly want. All the articles that I write, audio, philosophies of business, my experience, different things like that, all on the website. There's a blog there. There's pertinent news articles that are posted. You can get the My Two Cents. There's just a lot of information there. You can also call. It's 888-633-5420. And I will say that the phone system that I have is so uncomplex that the phone gets answered within 15 seconds. So you're not dancing around for 5 minutes, pressing 5 and 3 and 2 and all that kind of stuff. So we try to be productive wherever possible. But those are the two best ways people can get in touch if they want more information.
Okay. Andy, I want to thank you so much for being our guest once again, and I surely hope you will accept our invitation to be our guest the third Wednesday of next month once again.
Actually, absolutely, Joe, and I'm sure it's always great being on Liberty Talk Radio and talking with you and talking to this great audience, and I look forward to being back next month. I'm sure we'll have some more great topics to kick around.
Oh, I'm sure. Thank you so much, Andy, and good night.
Good night, Joe.
Oh, boy. I mean, I just enjoy Andy so much. Gotta be careful what I say, because I might say. I mean, he understands what is going on, and we should really take heed. And really, do contact Andy. Look at his website. It's Sutton, SUTTON-associates.net. He's a straight shooter. He's... you know, he's just not an immoral person. You know, he's not a shyster, not trying to sell you something, you know, make a commission. You'll love working with him. Please give him a call. This is the end of tonight's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 2031st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.